This is a Nervous Chuckles production.
Hey! I'm reviewing here!
Hello, everybody. Welcome. No. I shouldn't get into singing again. When was the last time I actually sang? The last time I sang was in middle school, and that was a horrible 3 years of my life. I still flip off my middle school whenever I drive by. Anyway, let's not go there. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of I'm Reviewing Here. Oh, sorry. Lost my breath. Matthew Bussey. A podcast where I, Matthew Bussey, watch and review science, sound, cyber, movies of all time. Blah, 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 shum, blah, ding, dong. So good to be back. I just continue to wake up every day and realize how unbelievably stupid I am. I went to a Passover Seder last night. My two lovely friends invited me over, and we were talking. The one guy was talking at one point about how there's a point in the Seder. Seder, if you don't know, it's like a dinner, basically. There's a point in the Seder where when you drink wine, you're supposed to like lean to the left a little bit. And he explained, he's got like a very dry, funny sense of, you know, humor, but he was explaining how you do that, but it also makes it look like you're, quote, manspreading. And I laughed so loudly, so obnoxiously. Like that. Really conspicuously, loudly, obnoxiously, and absolutely nobody else laughed. And it really wasn't that funny. I just laughed because I thought manspreading was a dirty thing. I thought he was being dirty. I thought manspreading meant you, like, spread your legs and were like, hello, bing bong, you know? So, I and then I Googled it when I got home, and, I had it here on my phone for a sec. Oh, also, to be fair, manspreading, do people actually say that? It sounds so archaic. Oh, actually, I guess it does make sense. The act or practice by a man of sitting with the legs spread wide apart in a way that intrudes on the space of others. Okay, so I'm right, but it's not like a dirty thing. It's not a dirty thing, but I just, you know, I interpret everything to be dirty. I don't know, I was nervous. It was my Seders. They only happen like once a year for me. So yeah, it was scary. Leave me alone. Oh, my friends, it's going to be maybe a longer episode because... Sorry. I don't know what's wrong with me, guys. It's going to be a longer episode because the film today is very, very long. This is a very famous gangsta movie. It is called Once Upon a Time in Asia. Just kidding. Once Upon a Time in America. There probably is a movie called Once Upon a Time in Asia. There are so many Once Upon a Time movies. There's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Once Upon a Time in the West, Once Upon a Time in America. And this movie is Once Upon a Time in America. I just got confused. Okay, shh, take a listen.
I'm not interested in your friends in high places, and I don't trust politicians.
No, if we listened to you, we'd still be rolling drunks for a living.
Are you broke?
You'll carry that stink of the streets with you the rest of your life.
I like the stink of the streets. It makes me feel good. I like the smell of it. It opens up my lungs.
Arnon Milchan presents a Sergio Leone film starring Robert De Niro, Once Upon a Time in America. The story of friends. As boys, they made a pact to share their fortunes.
Agreed.
Their loves. And their lives.
You'll put up and you'll shut up. You hear nothing and you see nothing. Just like you did for Bugsy.
You was better off you stayed in the Bronx.
As men, they shared a dream.
I swear to God, Noodles, you and me together, we can make it come true.
To rise together from poverty to power.
There they are, the four horsemen of the apocalypse.
A dream they followed through two decades that changed the nation.
You ever think of setting yourselves up in business?
Oh my God!
They forged an empire built on greed, violence, and betrayal.
Today they ask us to get rid of Joe. Tomorrow they ask me to get rid of you. Is that okay with you? Because it's not okay with me.
Open it!
You want to go swimming?
Yeah, let's go for a swim.
We're going to need you guys today.
You're the only person that I have ever cared about.
Maybe Sharky was right.
Maybe I ought to just dump you.
He's gonna do this. He's gonna do it with or without you.
It began as a dream. It grew to an empire. It ended as a mystery that refused to die. Robert De Niro, James Woods, Elizabeth McGovern, Joe Pesci, Burt Young, Tuesday Weld, and Treat Williams in a Sergio Leone film, Once Upon a Time in America.
This movie, Once Upon a Time in America, is over 3.5 hours long. Yeah. Now, the last long movie that I had to give up on was Out One, because that was like at least 2,500 hours long. Once Upon a Time in America, though, okay, it's a very long movie. There are also a lot of different versions of the film. Always, I always say this, watch the original film, how it was meant to be. I'm going to get to that a lot later. There's a lot to get to with this movie, but Once Upon a Time in America, holy shitballs, this is a violent, epic crime gangster movie. It came out in, did I say the year already? I can't remember. It came out in 1984. It is directed by Sergio Leone. Sergio Leone, most famously, in my book, that in my head, that is, did The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly with Clint Eastwood. Great episode. That's many episodes back. Listen to it. I love that movie. That's also a very long movie. I was so surprised at how much I did not enjoy Once Upon a Time in America. I am gobsmacked. I am flabbergasted. I know. Why am I flabbergasted? Because I love a good gangster movie. I love it. And I didn't mind that this was a long movie. Once Upon a Time in America is one of the ugliest films I think I've ever seen in my life. Now, that's not really a bad thing, because gangsters are ugly, mean people. They're not glamorized in this film like they are in, like, you know, a lot of Martin Scorsese films. But then again, in the Martin Scorsese films and all these movies and all the gangster movies, the baddies are murderers. They're awful humans. But, you know, there's always that crazy charisma that they have where, you know, you kind of want to keep seeing them on screen. You know, Goodfellas, Joe Pesci is a piece of shit in that movie. He is nasty, but you love him. You just love him in it, you know? You do. And I think my issue with Once Upon a Time in America is I just could not enjoy or like anybody in it. This is a movie where Leone is not glamorizing this life. He's not glamorizing this genre at all. He wants it to be violent and brutal, and he succeeds at that. Now, does that make it an enjoyable film? For me, not so much. This film made me so icky. I felt like I had to, like, go take a shower afterwards. I also was just extremely confused by it. And it is a hard movie to get through, especially if you watch it on Tubi. It was on Tubi, and I forgot that Tubi has commercials. So I think in total, it took me about 5 hours. No hyperbole. I think it took me about 5 friggin' hours. No, actually 6, because I had to let the dog out. 6, actually probably 7. 6 to 7 hours to get through this movie with commercials. Yeah, this was like a Saturday night many months ago, and I don't know if it's still on Tubi, you'll have to check, but oh man. And you know, I'm also so surprised I didn't enjoy it, because Robert De Niro's in it. One of the best. Robert De Frickin' Niro. Yeah, Burt Young is in it. Oh, he just passed away last year. Joe Pesci's in it too. He's got a small role. But James Woods, Elizabeth McGovern from Downton Abbey, Treat Williams, who also just died. Why is everybody... stop dying. Okay.
Plots and ups.
All right. So this story, I'm going to do my best to make it understandable, but that's going to be hard because even I had trouble following this story. There were a bunch of screenwriters for this film. And also the movie Once Upon a Time in America. It's based on the book The Hoods by Harry Gray. He was a Russian Jewish-American writer. And yeah, who wrote this screenplay? Well, Leone, Sergio Leone, co-wrote it with Leonardo. This is the most Italian thing ever, and I love it. Leonardo Benvenuti, Piero De Bernardi, Enrico Medioli, Franco Arcalli, and Franco Farini. Oh, Franco Farini, I like that name. Okay, so the year is 1933. Three thugs search for a man named Noodles, torturing people for information. Noodles, love that name. He's played by De Niro. They enter a Wayang theater. Sorry, that's like an Indonesian kind of puppet theater that they do. They enter there where the proprietors slip into a hidden opium den within the building and warn Noodles. He is apathetic, drugged, and grasping a newspaper featuring the demise of bootleggers Patrick Goldberg, Philip Stein, and Maximilian Berkowitz. He recalls observing police removing their corpses. Max burned beyond recognition. Noodles evades capture and leaves the city alone and penniless. De Niro, of course, is just a natural and is already, like, you know, he's such, like, De Niro was so good because he was such a handsome guy and just so good at just, like, you do not want to bump into any character that De Niro plays. Like, De Niro in Meet the Parents used to scare the bejesus out of me as a kid. Anyway, in 1923, okay, so Noodles, his real name is David Noodles Aronson, and his friends, Patsy Goldberg, Cockeye Stein, and Dominic, struggle as street kids in Manhattan's Lower East Side, committing petty crimes for local boss Bugsy. Max foils one of their robberies, but has the booty... booty stolen from him by a corrupt police officer, Whitey. A lot of corrupt people in this movie, and a lot of guys who think it's okay to go up and grab women's tatas, which is not cool at all. And it gets worse than that. Later, they blackmail the officer, catching him having sex with Peggy, an underage prostitute. See? And the five youngsters start a gang with the same level of police protection as Bugsy. Max and Noodles become best friends. Just remember that we're in the past right now. And Max, when we're in the present, is played by James Woods. He's one of the main characters in this film. And they're all Jewish, too. This is also a very big thing. I had no idea there would be a gangster movie where it's all set in the Jewish community. I just feel like that's... I don't know. I don't see a lot of movies like that. I don't see any movies like that. I've seen movies with... Are there even movies where... Oh, I shouldn't go down that territory. Okay, anyway. I was going to say, are there movies where, like, the big villain happens to be Jewish in the movie? Well, in real life, yeah, that happens all the time. But on screen, no, I don't want to go there. Oh, my God. Jesus. Here I go again. In 1924, the group rises. They're all Jewish. The group rises. That's all I wanted to say. In 1924, the group rises through the ranks after implementing Noodle's idea to hide bootleg liquor. In 1925, they stash half their earnings in a railway station locker, giving the key to Fat Mo, a friend not directly involved in their activities. Noodles is in love with Mo's sister, Deborah, who dreams of becoming a dancer and actress. Deborah is played by, young Deborah is played by Jennifer Connelly. Gorgeous. And Deborah, older Deborah, is played by Elizabeth McGovern. I don't know Downton Abbey. I keep pretending that I do because I think it's like a turn on for people, but it's not. They don't really care. So he loves Deborah. Bugsy, now a rival, eventually ambushes the boys and shoots little Dominic. Oh, this scene was crazy. Who dies in Noodle's arms. In a fit of rage, young Noodles kills Bugsy and injures a police officer and is sentenced to prison. Cut to 1931, and Noodles is released. He rejoins his friends, who are now prosperous bootleggers during Prohibition. His first job with them is a diamond heist using a jewelry employee, an occasional prostitute named Carol, as their informant. I don't know why I said it like that. Carol was... I feel like I know this actress. She was played by Tuesday Weld, who was in this movie called... Looking for Mr. Goodbar with Diane Keaton. I haven't seen it, though, but it's supposed to be good. I think it's like a thriller, but I always thought it was like a rom-com, because if you look at the poster, it looks like a rom-com, and Diane Keaton's in it, too, so I think that's also kind of why I thought it was a rom-com. Okay, shut up. During the robbery, Carol goads Noodles into hitting her, after which he rapes her. Yeah, the R word. I don't like to say it. She later goes on to become Max's mole. It's a really awful scene. But it's just it's a weird scene because, you know, she's coaxing him into hitting her, and then she doesn't want to get R'd, but he does it. It's dirty. It's just such a dirty, dirty, not dirty like sexy, I mean dirty like gross film. Cut to 1932, the job that had been commissioned by a syndicate figure to eliminate the competition sits badly with Noodles, who, unlike Max, dislikes hierarchy and lacks political ambition. The gang provides protection for Teamsters Union boss Jimmy O'Donnell, but Noodles later rejects Max's plan to deepen those ties. Are you confused? I'm confused, too. I had to go back and rewatch many, many scenes in this movie, hence why it took me 7 hours to get through it. Seeking to form a genuine intimacy with Deborah, Noodles takes her on a lavish date, where she reveals her plans to pursue a career in Hollywood. On their drive back, a frustrated Noodles rapes her in the limousine. This scene was abhorrent. Disgusting. He is later, and also what's even more disgusting is how the driver of the car does absolutely nothing. He just, you know, is like, well, I gotta get paid, so I'm just gonna pull over and let you do that horrible thing to her. It's awful. It's an awful scene. Noodles is not a good guy at all, and I think that's why I had issues with this movie. I wanted him to get friggin' murdered in this film. I didn't. Oh, okay, I'll get to it at the end. Noodles is later met with Deborah's aloofness when he watches her board the train to California. The gang's success ends with the 1933 repeal of Prohibition. Max suggests a New York Federal Reserve Bank heist, which Noodles and Carol deem a suicide mission. Carol convinces Noodles to inform the police about a lesser offense, hoping brief incarceration will cool off Max's ambition. Max also is awful, James Woods. After Noodles calls the police, Max knocks him out during a seemingly impromptu argument. That was a weird scene. This leads to the events shown in the prologue. Upon regaining consciousness and learning that Max, Patsy, and Cockeye have been killed by the police, a guilt-ridden Noodles hides in the opium den. He saves Mo, but finds out that his new girlfriend Eve has been murdered and the railway locker money has disappeared. With his gang killed and himself hunted by syndicate thugs, Noodles settles in Buffalo under the alias Robert Williams. Very original, Noodles. I almost just called him Buffalo. Cut to 1968. This is an epic movie, just so you know, obviously. So yes, this goes all over the place. Noodles is belatedly informed that the Beth Israel Cemetery is being redeveloped and is asked to rebury any loved ones. Upon inquiry, the rabbi who had sent him the letter informs him that the bodies of the three dead friends have since been relocated to Riverdale. Remember that show, Riverdale? Oh, that show got so ridiculous. Realizing that someone has deduced his identity, Noodles returns to Manhattan and stays with Mo. Inside the Riverdale mausoleum, Noodles finds a key to the railway locker. The caption of the commemorative plaque falsely states that the mausoleum was erected by Noodles himself. I feel like this whole plot here, I did not give a rat's ass about it. The locker reveals a suitcase full of money and a note stating this is a down payment on his next job. Noodles watches news of an assassination attempt on controversial U.S. Secretary of Commerce Christopher Bailey. The report shows Jimmy O'Donnell, still a Teamsters boss, distancing himself from the Bailey corruption scandal. Noodles finds Carol in a retirement home run by the Bailey Foundation. She tells him that Max manipulated them into tipping him off to the police and opened fire first, wishing to die young rather than an insane asylum like his father. I kind of don't even remember that scene. After spotting her in the retirement home's dedication photo, Noodles tracks down Deborah, still an actress. He tells her about his invitation to a party at Bailey's mansion. Deborah admits to being Bailey's lover and begs Noodles to leave before he is confronted with hurtful revelations. Ignoring Deborah's advice, Noodles sees Bailey's son just outside, who evidently looks like a younger Max. Oh boy. Oh boy. At the party, Noodles meets Bailey, who reveals he is actually Max and that he faked his death with the help of the police and syndicate, stole the gang's money, and reinvented himself as a self-made Teamsters-connected politician. Corrupt! He confirms that he made Deborah his mistress years earlier. Faced with ruin and the specter of a Teamster assassination, Max reveals the job he has for Noodles to kill him. Noodles, obstinately referring to him by his Bailey identity, refuses, explaining that in his eyes, Max died with the gang. As Noodles leaves the estate, a garbage truck starts up and a man, presumably Max, and I got a text. It's Max. Hi, Max. Stop being mean. Max walks from the entrance toward Noodles until the truck passes between them. Noodles sees the truck's auger conveyor, I think that's how you say it, I don't do cars, grinding garbage, but the man is nowhere to be seen. Huh. So what happened? We don't know. Or I don't know, at least. In 1933, Noodles enters the opium den after his friend's deaths, taking the drug and broadly grinning. And that, my friends, is the ending of Once Upon a Time in America. He smiles and grins at the camera. The music comes on. It's a freeze frame. And then the credits roll up. And then your butt really hurts because this is a really long movie. The end!
You live with her, you bring her here, and you tell me not to mess with broads.
You're forgetting about one thing.
What's that?
I don't give a fuck about her.
Max.
Shut up! Max. Shut up!
Hey, Maxie, tell me something. What are you going to spend your honeymoon on? A cat house?
Maxie,
Shut the fuck up! Shut up! Just shut up! You want me to dump her? You want me to kick her fucking ass out of here? You want to punch and tuck us, huh? Want me to kick your ass out or what? You want me to kick? Get the fuck out! Get the fuck out! Get out!
Yep, that is just one scene from the movie, and I like that scene because he says, tuck us. Tuck us! It's funny. Yeah. Man, oh man. Now I'm gonna quiz you on what happens in this movie. I'm just kidding. Look, my friends, this movie is very, very famous, and I'll get to why it's famous in a little bit. Well, sort of. Yeah, well, no. Why is this such a famous movie? People, especially film people, you know, they love it. Now, they love it, I think, mostly for the production level. And I am going to give credit. The production level in this film, the cinematography, the art direction, the costume design, just the general scope of the whole movie is incredible. Abso-friggin-lutely. Cinematography was by Tonino Delli Colli, and the music as well was also by Ennio Morricone, who did The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. He did a lot of Tarantino films. He did, like, The Hateful Eight and Inglourious Basterds, I think he did. Yeah. He passed away recently. Yeah, I mean, look, visually, this is a very incredibly well-made film. Of course it is. Why didn't I like it? It's really hard for me to like a movie where, oh, there's a spider. Hold on. Sorry. Stand by. Hold on. Let's just call this podcast Spider. I'm reviewing her spiders. It's a fast one. Oh, it's jumping. Oh, God. I think I got it. Ow. Okay, back. Sorry for that. What was I saying? It's really, really hard for me to actually enjoy or be invested in a film that is just so abhorrent. And if you love this movie and you don't think it's ugly, okay, that's your prerogative. It's totally, totally fine. It's your opinion. I just found it to be so ugly, like ugly in a way that I could not enjoy it at all. And the fucker is still alive. All right, I'm just going to pause. Hold on. Back. We're back. Okay, I do swear to God it's dead now. I'm so, so sorry about that. Frankie, don't eat it. Frankie, don't eat that. No. What am I saying here? This movie... All right. I'm okay with really dark, depressing, intense, violent movies. I'm totally okay with that. I think this is a complicated movie for me, though. And it's kind of ironic. Not ironic. That's not the right word. It's hard for me to say that I didn't enjoy this movie as much as I thought it would, because I get that it needs to be gritty. And I really admire, too, that Leone doesn't, you know, glorify any of this, you know, and the only other person I can think of is Martin Scorsese and his gangster films. But even like when you watch like the old, like Little Caesar and White Heat, you know, like the really classic black and white, gangster films. I mean, they're cheesy, but they're also that's kind of like the thrill of them, you know, that's where the excitement comes from. Because it's like you can take them seriously, but you know that they're just meant to be entertaining. Once Upon a Time in America isn't really trying to be that, though. Once Upon a Time in America is really showing you, no, this is what it was like. These gangsters, no, they sexually assaulted and raped people all the time. They cursed and were awful humans. And no, they didn't have a conscience. You know, they're not nice people at all, period. So now here's a movie about that. And it's like, okay, so they're not really nice. But then what's the point of the movie if you don't like anybody? I feel like I'm really, really prolonging this debate right here. But long story short, Once Upon a Time in America, incredible production value, incredible, incredible, incredible. Very confusing, but that might have just been me. Obviously, a big epic story, which I liked. Could not get into it because it honestly was just a little bit too icky for me. Now, it's meant to be icky, which I totally understand, but for me, this is a film I really don't want to go near again. And that's saying a lot because, you know, I love Robert De Niro. Everybody does. So it's hard. It's hard for me. I really, really hope that I had liked this film. BTS Secrets and Scandals. Here we go. Do, 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 do. You know that song Ayo by Lady Gaga? So why is this movie so long? And are there other versions of it? What's going on? Yeah, if you go on Wikipedia, guys, there are like 5 different versions of this film. The version I watched was the full original version of this. So this also was Sergio Leone's last feature film. What happened was originally the film was 2 hours and it did not do well at all. Nobody liked it. Critics didn't like it. They thought it was a mess. The longer version was released and that did a much, much, much better than the original. The original was a total box office flop. Now, I don't know. I haven't watched the original, the 2-hour version, and I don't think I will. I can maybe understand why maybe it was a little floppy just because, not floppy, what am I, a rabbit? Disjointed maybe because there's so much that happens in the story. It's weird for an epic film to be 2 hours. Yeah. Obviously. Sergio Leone hinted that the final scene could suggest, I like this a lot, suggest that the film was an opium-induced dream for Noodles. Opium users often report experiencing vivid fantasies, which tend to explore the user's past and future. That is amazing. Yeah. What if all of this was just a dream? Once upon a time in Inception. Jennifer Connelly, this was her first feature film role. She was 12 years old, adorable. To prepare a draft of the script, screenwriter Norman Mailer himself barricaded himself in a Rome hotel with whiskey bottles, boxes of Cuban cigars, and a typewriter for 3 weeks. That's crazy. I just kind of heard about Norman Mailer, and I think he, like, killed somebody. Or am I thinking of the right dude? I didn't really read about that, but I like that because that reminds me a lot of The Aviator, Leonardo DiCaprio, where he plays Howard Hughes, and he's a total mentally ill, sick guy who has severe germophobia and everything, and he does pretty much that. Robert De Niro requested a private meeting with renowned crime boss Meyer Lansky to prepare for his role as Noodles. The request was denied. De Niro, you got guts. I would... Reminds me of that episode of Boy Meets World where Corey and Sean end up, like, working with the mob. Do you remember that episode? That was, like, one of the... Well, every season of Boy Meets World was ridiculous. In a good way. I love that show. I'd be scared, though. That's what I wanted to say. So producer Arnon Milchan, who was Elizabeth McGovern's lover at the time, has a cameo appearance as a chauffeur in the scene when she is raped. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, they're all just actors, but I don't know why somebody would feel okay with being an extra in one of the most intense scenes of the film, where the person being attacked is their lover. Kind of weird. Did it work out? I don't think so. When filming was completed, the footage ran to a total of 8 to 10 hours. That is crazy, 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 crazy. I am just like... I would I would be dead. Yeah. When so director Leone and editor Nino Baragli trimmed the footage to around 6 hours with the plan of releasing the film as 2 3-hour movies. The producers refused this idea, and Leone had to further cut the film down to 3 hours and 49 minutes. That's just crazy. I could see them doing that nowadays because, you know, it's like that new, what's it called? Kevin Costner has a new 2-part Western epic coming out. And I could see that. I don't know. Would it have made a difference if this was 2 films? For me, I probably would have still been a little very grossed out by it, to be perfectly honest. And I don't know if you caught that, but right when I said that, Siri just went, "Huh?" Yeah. Moment. The final shot of Noodles smiling at the camera, in the opium den. That was really cool. That was a chilling shot. Look, every frame in this film was amazing. Yes, everything that you see on screen, you know, the effort that went into it is amazing. Honestly, it just was. I just don't like mean people.
Mais est-ce que je suis d'accord avec les critiques de ce film?
Critics, for the most part, really like this film. You know, nowadays, it's a classic. Everybody talks about it. Kenneth Turan of the Los Angeles Times said, "The film slips easily back and forth in time, dancing between the decades, often making the connection from one era to another solely by means of brilliant cuts that work like magic." Now, I put that quote down because I kind of disagree. I got a little bit confused by... what was the past? What was the present? What was the past? What was the future? What was the future of the future? You could only really tell when De Niro had like a lot of makeup on, but I even in the present day though, it was like, wait, is this 1931 or 1932? Because you can't tell who is who. So that did confuse me. Sorry, Kenneth. I disconcur. Is that a word? Yes, it's a word. Richard Corliss of Time Magazine said, "Leone is less interested in arousing an audience's easier emotions than in presenting, at a dispassionate distance, the horror of two men warily walking toward each other on a tightrope suspended above the snake pit of their deepest compulsions." That's a really good analysis, because there is no arousal in this film. There's nothing to really enjoy in this film. It's a sick film. Dom Nero of Esquire magazine said, "A stratosphere-scraping citadel of cinema." What in the hell does that mean? "Nearly everything about Leone's last film and greatest masterwork speaks to the grand illusion of the American dream." Does the American dream, does that just mean like you want to, you know, like get a good job and start a family in America? Is it like offensive to say that now? I don't know. There's so many things I don't know. American dream. Like, oh, like you're living the American dream. Well, I hope that this isn't the American dream and you don't have to like kill people. Jeff Beck of Examiner.com said, "While Sergio Leone's Once Upon a Time in America is not quite the masterpiece that some make it out to be due to its excess, there are still plenty of things to recommend about it." Yes, I agree. It's worth seeing. I'm not saying don't see it. I'm just saying brace yourself. Adrian Turner of Radio Times said, "Just gasp at the scale, at the immaculate period reconstruction, and at that incredible opening with its endlessly ringing phone." Yes. Immaculate period reconstruction indeed.
Is it really one of the best movies of all time?
I think this is one of the coolest... epics of all time. Coolest, cool movies. It's a cool epic because of the levels of art direction and all that. Yeah, you know, like I said, the reconstruction of Prohibition and everything. That's amazing. That's really, really well done. Is it one of the best movies, period? I'm going to say no. I'm going to say it's a film that you should definitely check out. Sergio Leone was a very famous director, and I think he has another film on this list, which I cannot wait to see. One of the best, though, it wasn't for me. And also, just know, I feel like there are much better gangster films out there. Films that feature characters that are, yes, bad and very crooked and awful, but, you know, they... Oh my god, I'm confused again, people! Because I get it. Leone is showing you that this is not a pretty lifestyle. But then, does it make for a good movie? Does it make for a worthwhile film? I don't really think so. Not for me. Just not for me. Not for me. But look, pretend that I'm going to say a good quote right now, because I don't know any good quotes that relate to what I'm trying to say right now. So look, go see the movie, though. Honestly, go check it out. I will see you next time. We are going very religious for the next episode. We are going to be talking about, as in I'm going to be talking about, and you're going to talk about it, but I won't be able to hear you, a movie called The Gospel According to St. Matthew. Oh, I wish it was like Easter or when did Jesus die? No, he was resurrected on Easter. Oh, he was born on Christmas. Duh, Christ. I'm getting ahead of myself. Wait for the next episode. Yeah, The Gospel According to St. Matthew. As of right now, it is on the Criterion channel, but double check. And yeah, if you want to follow along, there will be spoilers. But if you're already super religious, you're going to know what happens in the movie, because it's, the story that we've all been taught, or we've all heard of. I wasn't really taught that as a kid, for reasons that I won't get into today. But anyway, yes, see you next time. Thank you for tuning in. In the meantime, get your ass off the couch and go to the goddamn movies, okay? I don't care if you have an embarrassing pimple or a scar on your face, okay? You're in a pitch black theater. Nobody's going to see you. If you're afraid to walk through the lobby, put a ski mask over you so nobody will see you, okay? Nobody will look funny at you or point at you and laugh. This is 2024. You can dress however you want, all right? Woke culture is here, and it's okay to be who you want to be, okay? For the most part, because there are still mean people, but you know what I'm saying. You're fine. Just go. Please go. Support your local theater. Do it for me, and you'll get a free subscription or a free... Oh, you made it. You made it. You made it. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of I'm Reviewing Here. New episodes drop Tuesdays and Fridays. You can get this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Feel free to follow me on Instagram at I'm Reviewing Here. You can also subscribe on YouTube. New episodes drop there the same day they drop on the podcast. Don't forget to subscribe. Please leave a review if you'd like. Be mean. Be nice. Hit on me. I don't really care. Candor really, really is important to me. And, you know, it helps the podcast too. So I really hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is brought to you especially by Nervous Chuckles. That is my fake production company, because I make people nervously chuckle all the time, because they never know if I'm telling a joke or not. So they're always like, do I laugh? Do I not laugh? Is he serious? Is he insane? Did he get out of the loony? What's going on? So if I made you nervously chuckle, then that means that I did my job. And thank you. There is no funding for this podcast, but if you want to give me money, then hit me up. DM me. Bye-bye.